The signal you are receiving is coming from deep inside of FEMA Region 1, well within the battle lines of the municipal corporation known as the Commonwealth of Taxachusetts, radiating out to the darkest corners of Al Gore's internet from our secret broadcast bunker, cleverly disguised as a middle-class living room. This is Red Pill Politics. Well, howdy there, patriots and socialist distancers. It's time for your weekly dose of Red Pill Politics. It is my sincere pleasure to be spending this Sunday with all y'all among the best audiences on all Al Gore's internet. It's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Got a beautiful sunny day here in the Northeast right now. What a mixed bag of stuff, as they say. If you're unsatisfied with the weather up here, just wait a few minutes. You know, we've gone from bare ground, especially up in New Hampshire, up north a little bit more. We've been monitoring so that we can slip in there and get some work done when the weather allows here as early as possible. And, you know, we get down to bare ground and all the ice and snow is gone. And, you know, up there, a little moisture in the air, you know, the elevation is such that you wind up with a couple inches of snow again. And it's been going back and forth. And we got a bunch of rain, cleared it out, down to bare ground, and then back up to a foot of snow. So it's hit or miss just a little north of me here in Massachusetts. We got bare ground. Yesterday was one of those types of, it was that cold, and the rain was so cold that it felt like it should have been snow. It was just that type of cold that goes right to your core, and it rained all day long. But beautiful sunny skies today. Looks like we're going to have a couple of days of nice weather. And what I'm going to do, last week, as you recall, we were going to break the show up in two segments there, and hour two we were supposed to spend on Victory Gardens and talking about that, and the overflow of current events ate up most of that time. So being as persistent as I am, I'm going to take it in reverse order this week. We're going to put the gardening stuff first, make sure we get it in, because the clock is ticking, time is running out. So we're going to have a little bit on this probably right through spring, at that point where, you know, things should be in the ground and going. First hour is going to be talking about this stuff, getting your plan started, begin that discussion. I want you to call in, too, and really specifically encourage you first-time callers that are really shy, okay? Get over your shyness. We're at a point in time in this country where you really do have to abandon your shyness and begin to stand and speak and become engaged. So I kind of like to gauge where the listeners are at. I don't want to dumb it down per se and be talking about things that are, you know, great redundant that you already know about. I want to start at a point where, you know, we really can begin to tweak the outcome, you know, the what we reap from the seeds that we sow. I hope you get involved. I encourage first-time callers, okay? If I Sam gets a call and you let him know you're a first-time caller, I'm going to give you priority today, all right? I love all the callers and the regular callers to the show. Love you guys. Keep doing it. But I do want to encourage some of you that have not called into the show. In particular, let's jump right into, you know, doing the most defiant thing you can do to government, which is feed yourself. All right. So happy March 24th. It is we're in the tail end of March already. So hopefully some of you got a head start on our discussion and already have some things started in your, you know, in your little greenhouses inside, depending on where you are. Again, I'm coming at you from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, so up here it's still cold. We're, you know, a month or so away from getting things into the ground outside safely. So up here in these areas, we often start our plants February and March, depending on what you got going. Things like, traditionally a lot of people buy at the store things like tomatoes. They often get pepper plants, cabbages and Brussels sprouts, things like that. And right down the line, I'm actually seeing a lot of common row styled plants where you usually buy a package or two or three of seed and lay it out in great big rolls. They're now selling them in little plugs and pots. So nonetheless, those things that you really do have to get a head start on, because if you plant a tomato seed up here in this zone or anywhere around us, if you plant a tomato seed outside, once it becomes safe to do so beyond frost, you know, you're going to be lucky to get much of a yield out of that. You know, you want them up and on their way by the time it's warm enough outside. In fact, you got to worry about acclimation at that point, because they've been nice and toasty warm, all right, inside your home, sheltered, and you got to transition them outdoors where it might still be a little chilly at night. So we want to avoid shocking them. Just definitely don't want to be hit by the frost. And you want the plant as far along, as much of a jump start as you can get, particularly in the northern zones. So I'm coming at it from that angle. It's going to be a little different as you get down south. Your growing season's very much different, and you're able to do these things that we can't do up here. So that's the angle I'm coming at anyway. So, you know, getting your plant started, there was, you know, I spent a lot of time working on this. I had a lot of failures, and I'm going to share with you what I finally settled on as an efficient way of getting these things started, not losing them. Because I thought, oh, just because you go out and buy a grow light, for example, because they become pretty readily available. You can go to a Walmart and for, oh, I don't know, $10, $15, you can get a 2-foot grow light. Right, but it, you know, it's not a miracle tool, but it's something. If you're in limited space, and those of you that are in more of an urban area where you have to think about these things, maybe that's a part of the solution. It's inexpensive, right? If you're limited by your finances, it's an inexpensive purchase that will help get you where you need to go. Now, as you're looking at this, you got to be a realist, and everyone's situation is different. What are your goals? What are your realistic goals here, and how much are you going to invest in what you're doing? So if this turns out to be something that you're just unsure of, and you're going to start at a lowest cost that you can, do that. Get your dip your toes in, check it out, check the water, see if it's for you. Hopefully it is. But if it winds up where you're pretty convinced this is going to be a significant lifestyle inclusion now, is more of an aggressive agriculture where you literally are trying to grow all the food that you need for you and your family, there are investments that are worth making. Up front, I can tell you right now, is getting copies of literature, things that are, just there. There's a lot of wonderful resources out there. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. Amazon, go and just start doing some searches, and you will see some wonderful books out there. I don't want to get into the politics of Amazon. I know all about that. But right now I'm talking about preparation. We don't have the luxury of time, so as quickly as possible, use what's available to you. If you're preparing to live off the grid, don't deny yourself of electricity right now, okay? prepare for it. Use everything that's at your disposal to get where you need to be as quickly as possible. That includes going to Amazon, do a search. You know the old trick is, once you find out who the supplier is, you can go directly to them, find their website, and buy from them if you want. But use the search engine. Locate some literature that you can put in your library. This is not only on gardening, but first aid and other critical things like that. You should have hard copies, all right, books that you can flip the pages and smell the paper, okay? That's real, all right? Because if you want to be prepared for a grid-down situation, you don't want all your stuff in PDF files on your computer, all right? So get some of the literature and start reading it. You're going to get an awful lot out of it. I know I did. I go through these books. I have several, and I'm constantly going back and forth through them and learning new things. So, beef up on that. That's a worthwhile investment. What are the primary things that these plants need? When you're starting out, when you're just germinating, you really don't need much. In fact, they often recommend that you don't put in fertilizers, as those, when they're very small and tender, can burn them up pretty quick. And that's not the point of germination, is to get the seed to pop. All right? And at that point, that's when sun, when nutrients, things like that, become more relevant, is once the seed is actually popped. So we're still in the germination phase here. but what are other worthwhile investments that we know we're going to need to be able to, to even evaluate stresses on plants? Because in those books, as you'll find, and if you go online, I'm not saying don't go to the internet and download a lot of material. I am saying that too. I'm just saying that your access to it later might be impinged if the grid goes down. But go and look. There's another thing you get probably is posters of, because I'm a visual learner. I got to see things, often hold things and do things in my hand. That's the way I take things in a long-term memory quite often. So seeing the effects of, stresses on a plant, you can often say, well, this is a nutrient deficiency in X, Y, or Z, just by looking at the changes in the pigments on the leaves of the plant. So getting these things that you need to test the conditions that that allow you to standardize and monitor and amend your soils. It's really all about that. It's about how healthy your soils are. It dictates how healthy your plants are. So some of the testing equipment, pH, a couple things you can do. You can get the little tabs, the little litmus tabs, and, they'll get you in the ballpark. They've come a long way with meters. They are nice. They are convenient. Pretty durable, but, if the technology fails and the situation, doesn't allow you to directly replace these things, that poses a problem. But you should have backups for things like that. And what you'll find also, although this monitoring equipment is very important as you're getting started and understanding this, you're going to find out that if you're good about this and you keep a notebook, things like that, you make observations. You don't just blow in and out of your garden or your greenhouse or your grow tent and just, add water and leave. Okay, if you actually observe these plants and what they're doing, it all of a sudden you're going to see that you come up with the right soil blends for individual situations that are just ideal, and it becomes second nature. You'll start seeing things in a plant, maybe, because you will get better at maintenance of the soil. And that as you get better at it, you're going to see less and less disease and deficiencies. But nonetheless, you'll start making that connection pretty quick in soil amendments that can correct those early on. You don't want to get stuck, behind the eight ball. Like around here, one of the common problems is powdery mildew. Once we get in to the summer months, man, I had so many cucumbers and squash with great big leaves. In some of the corners here where the sunlight didn't get, or at least get to long enough, you start getting that powdery mildew, and it's everywhere. So, you know, treating that early is very important, or it will, it's you know, spores. It will literally blow all over your whole garden, and every broadleaf plant you have will suffer because of it. So, you know, there's some things that might be beneficial is monitoring pH. You know, I think moisture, I'm not going to go too much into that, you know, to keep the soil moist. You never let your soil get so dry that it begins to shrink away from the, you know, the sides of the container it's in. I mean, that's just common sense. So moisture meters, once you get into more advanced gardening where that type of thing really is critical, and I don't see that is happening too much in what we're doing here, common sense watering. So let me think, what else might be a worthwhile investment? You know, fertilizer. There's natural things. I love doing natural stuff, but when you are growing plants and you're starting inside, you need to get them, you know, put on biomass is what it's all about. Many of the fertilizers, and with marijuana growing being what it is, there's been an explosion in that technology and the things that are available to us. And I go to those hydroponic places and I buy their fertilizer setups. Usually it's a three-bottle set, and it, you know, has it right on the side. Right from the point when you're germinating, which is weak or no nutrients at all, because you're just germinating, to moderate growth, to aggressive veg mode, in flowering and then fruiting, and right through the whole life cycle of the plant. And, you know, I tweak it a little bit. I look, and I've never had problems. As long as you, you know, get yourself in the ballpark with the recommendations that are on the bottle and then adapt it to your plants. You'll know more about each of these plants, whether, you know, if your main focus is tomatoes and cabbages, you know, you'll tweak that and they will do wonderful. So don't shy away. Don't get into the chemical stuff, the nasty things and the synthetic stuff. Go, stay organic. All right, stay with things that are not going to cause you soil amendment problems. All right, we've got some callers already lining up here. I'm going to see if we can get to those today and not leave anyone on the line. I've been pretty good about that this year. I'm at a point where I wasn't left a couple of people, and I do feel bad about that. But I'm doing pretty good, yay me. Let's go right now to Art from Georgia. How are you this morning, Art?
Hey, brother, how's it going? I might sound a little rough. This pollen season just really gets me every year, and it just wreaks havoc on my system. So hopefully you can hear me all right.
I can hear you, but you know what I understand is wonderful for that, and this is one of those occasions where the medicine isn't bitter, is a teaspoon of local honey every day.
Yep. I do a honey vinegar. I mean, not honey vinegar. I do a honey garlic thingy when I'm feeling ill. It really helps. Of course, honey vinegar, once a day dose of a tablespoon of honey vinegar is not a bad thing either. Anyway, you're talking about chemicals. And I want to touch on powdery mildew as well. Powdery mildew is a real bad problem around this part of Georgia. And what we found works really good is neem oil. N-E-E-M. Neem oil. Works really good for powdery mildew and such things as that. But as far as chemicals and fertilizers and stuff go, I try to stay away from them, because one thing that I've learned over the years with gardening, and I grew up on a farm, is that once you start your crops with chemicals, you pretty much kind of have to stay with it through the entire life of the plant. So the more natural you can do, the better off you're going to be. So I tell people, when you start looking at fertilizers, look for something. Well, of course, you're going to, like you mentioned, you want to look at what's in your area, soil types in your area. But for the most part, I found around here a good 10-20-10 or 15-30-15 tends to do really well in this part of northeast Georgia.
I think my grandfather used 10-10-10 quite often, and one other one. But, you know, as you keep going, I'm going to have to go and distinguish between traditional gardening in a row in a great big field versus raised bed type of situations, which is more, I guess, what I'm kind of gearing up for. Because it allows you to tweak the soil of each individual container and tailor it. Right. But, you know, with good organic matter, this is one of the things my soil teachers in college used to drum into our head, is that, you know, when you have ample organic matter, that's going to have pretty much all of the micronutrients that can be problematic, because it, unlike a macronutrient that it requires a lot of, and there is a lot of it in the environment, micronutrients, you know, once that little tiny little bit is gone, it, you know, can kill the plant if it's not readily available. So, you know, if keeping that organic material mixed in is pretty key and eliminates many of the problems you have with having to add extra fertilizer.
Right, exactly. And another thing, too, do not be afraid to mulch your crops. Mulching goes a long way toward helping extend the life of your plant and to help your plant produce its maximum potential. Mulching is very, very important. So don't be afraid to mulch.
And there's no such thing in the soil from compacting. Yeah, I saw that
yes,
the place I lived recently, where I just happened to run out of chips and whatever I was using as a mulch. And then later, as I moved them aside and looked at the soil surface itself, it was nice and fluffy as compared to every place that I walked. It was like concrete. So, yeah, good stuff. And it does cut down on the transpiration if you live in an arid environment and keeping the water from just evaporating from the soil surface. Cuts down on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And one final thing, I don't want to cover too much because it just it'd be taken away from too many other callers. But another thing is worms. Worms can go a long way towards aerating your soil. You want good aerated soil, and the easiest way to do that, if you don't have time to get out there and aerate it by hand with like a garden weasel or something, worms, lots of worms, they will turn your soil and continue to aerate your soil. That's very, very important for good, healthy root systems. Anyway, thanks, Dave. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time.
Oh, good deal. I'm glad I had to switch it around this week to make sure we got it in there first, because it's important stuff, and people seem to do react to it well. So I appreciate you calling in. Thank you.
All right. Have a good
one. You too. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. You know, mulch and that too. You know, there's times where that can go against you if you do too much. Or if you try to mulch with the wrong thing. So, you know, again, bone up on this stuff. Mulch is good, but are there situations you could create where it backfires? Are you introducing invasives, for example? You know, a good mulch should do what it's intended to do and not introduce more problems. So bear that in mind. But good advice there. But, you know, let's get into germination a little bit more. There's not a lot it's needed to begin germination. This is a phase where you're just trying to get the seed to pop. And different seeds germinate differently and at different rates. Some you can put directly into soil and do little plugs of whatever. If you wanted to start whatever, beets if you wanted, and carrots. I mean, typically those are put in outside in rows, but let's say you did want to start that. You can put that directly into the soil and they will germinate. Just got to keep it moist. Other things which I like to grow quite frequently, as a matter of fact, like morning glories. You know, they're viney. They cover every place. I got cable lines and fences that are unsightly or whatever. I plant those around the edges and along the house and things like that. And yeah, they got a very hard seed. It's like a little BB, extremely hard. And you can put those in thinking just because I keep it moist, it's going to pop. And what happens, you keep it moist and it rots. You know, it just doesn't ever open up. And, you know, one of the little tricks here is obviously seeds like that, you can just soak them, put them in a paper towel on a plate with some, you know, dampen it really good, keep it good and saturated to soften that up for 24 hours. But one of the things that I also do, and it's very successful, just don't overdo it, is get a flat sheet of sandpaper, put it right on the table and put those seeds on there on your hand and just roll the seeds a little bit. Because if you look very, very close at some of these seeds, and a morning glory seed is a classic example of that, you know, you pinch it, you feel it, it's like a little BB. It's very, very hard. And the shell of it is very hard and glossy. All right, that shell is pretty damn tough. And you've got to scarify that and or pre-soak it to soften that enough, or it just won't germinate. You won't get the ratios that you want. You really want almost every one to come up, right? So some of those harder shelled seeds, you know, just roll them around. Don't push and you know, where, you know, sand a hole through that shell. You're just looking to scratch it up a little bit. And then put it in a paper towel 24 hours and then right in the ground. And they'll do quite well. But what do they need? Do you need to put a grow light on them here? No, you don't. You need to keep them warm. Now, you can do it the old MacGyver way, which I've done a couple of times, is I just start a, you know, say a little plate of morning glory seeds, roll them around in the sandpaper, put them in a wet paper towel, and I'd put it up on top of my cable box. All right, it was just enough heat being given off from that to keep them warm, and they would pop the next day. They'd be in the ground and off to the races. Nowadays, another thing that you can go and look up, you can either buy them on Amazon, but they're readily available in more and more gardening shops, are those little heating pads, and they are tailored towards germinating seeds. So the heat range in which they'll go is kind of limited so that you don't do damage to the seeds, right? Regular heating pads could be modified for this, but it's on you to do some research because you can cook the damn things too. I'm just trying to give you some alternatives here. But the only thing needed for germination is you got to keep them moist, because if they start to pop and come out and then you let them dry up, I mean, they're super sensitive. So you really got to baby them when they're small like this. Is moisture, and you got to keep them warm. You can't put them out where it's, you know, anywhere near freezing and you got frost. You got to keep them in the house in an area that is warm. Now, when they pop, if you've started your germination, like if you're doing the hard shelled things like morning glories and that type of stuff, you know, that's when you'd introduce them in the dirt and get them going. And then you got to keep the light on them because they do require both light and then they require water. And the nutrients, as you'll see, are very little. You don't need a lot. You've got to get some roots on there. You got to get beyond those sun leaves, because the first two leaves of almost anything that germinates and pops from a seed puts out two rapid growing solar panels, basically. That's pretty much what they are. All right. And that is, you know, you've got to give that plant the light that it needs. The common problem, and this is something that I did, and I had to learn the hard way and figure it out. Well, actually, I'm going to get to that right after the break. I hear music coming in. So please stay with us. Hit the share button. Be ready to call in. And we'll be right back after these short messages. Red Pill Politics, you know, listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be right back in a few minutes. Stay with us, folks.
Do shadow hands run democracy? The edges speak of a lie. Shrouded in secrets and mysteries. Bloodlines of history, they sit at the top. Counting all the gold they have robbed common men. They put their puppets into place, then pull the strings. Simple whisper, sleight of hand. Is it too much to believe? Some kind of dark fantasy. Can man's mind be so cruel? Are we all that hard to fool? Bloodlines of history.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Charles de Gaulle once said, actually, it's difficult to envision in this regard any other criterion, any other standard than gold. Yes, gold, which does not change in nature, which can be made into either bars, ingots, or coins, which has no nationality, and which is considered in all places and all times the immutable and fiduciary value par excellence. So when the question is, why gold? It's simple, my friends. The answer to that question is simply, why not? Like it or not, precious metals will always be the world's reserve currency. Even though nations do not define their currency by their worth in, say, gold, individuals still buy gold and silver to protect themselves from inflation. The more money a nation's central bank pours into the economy, the less value its currency, the dollar is, which means the price of everything else rises. $21 up for a bag of dog food. Seeing that the dollar is cheap, that's why the cost of everything goes up. It's because the buying power, the value of the dollar has tanked. It's worth nothing. And yet gold that your family would have owned in 1907 will buy at least the same amount of goods, if not far more. William McPhee once stated, it's extraordinary how many emotional storms one may weather in safety if one is ballasted with ever so little gold. The truth about money, gold versus cash in a crisis, gold, a valuable thing to store, the power of gold in times of crisis. Historical sketch of paper currency. Oh, and beware the ides of rare coin dealers. And Alan Greenspan's speech on gold and economic freedom. How interesting. I'm going to give you gold and silver in 5 easy lessons. Seeking out the most efficient and most secure route to owning gold and converting it into widely accepted currency is the next best thing to enjoying gold-backed currency, my friends. In a world of central bankers hell-bent on devaluing our savings, you need to own private gold standard. contact me, Jeffrey Bennett at Kettle Moraine Limited, by calling our phone number at 602-799-8214. That's 602-799-8214.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Back, Red Pill Politics. You listen to Republic Broadcasting Network at republicbroadcasting.org. Please head on over, check out the website, programming there 7 days a week to feed your brain. All right, hit that share button and do hit the donation button on your way out. Any donations, large or small, are greatly appreciated. Not only keeps the lights on, but the signal going out a little bit wider. Maybe you would like to have a commercial air here on the network. Just got to call. That's all you got to do is call the station and let them know. And you too, we can work out what is called a mutually beneficial arrangement, which is a contract that is the strongest contract out there. It is not a compromise where both sides lose, but mutually beneficial. You get some advertising, and we get some funds to put the signal out farther. Get it? Works great. Check it out. And do get subscribed over at redpillpolitics.tv. All right, just because every once in a while I like to throw out a little notice of some of my other snarky musings. You can also find us on social media as they blink on and off. Let's jump back into it. I was about to talk about something that used to irk me something awful until I figured it out. And I'm going to share it with you right now so you are not irked. How's that? And that is grow lights. They do have some inexpensive ones out there. If that's what your budget allows, go for it, because you're going to need light. They're very inexpensive. Like I said, $10-$15. You can get a 2-footer, but they're limited. The output is limited in those. And if you're really going to invest in food security, you really can't go wrong by looking at the setups that they have for the marijuana growers. All right, I don't care about your position on marijuana at this point, but the industry and free market being what it is, what is developed around that is some pretty turnkey stuff. You can get a grow tent, large or small, one that'll fit in your existing closet, or one that requires, you know, half of a room. All right, but they have the technology out there that you should look at, and that includes lighting, much, much better lighting. It's stronger. They got timers that you can change them from whether you're trying to put on biomass and just a bigger plant as quickly as possible, and then switching over to flowering stage. All right, those growers really have fine-tuned a lot of that. All right, for $30, you can get sensors, and I've invested in some of these, and they work wonderfully. They sense humidity and temperature, and they will automatically turn on and off whatever you plug into them. Are you in a condition that constantly requires more humidity? Well, you could put a little kid's, like a little vaporizer thing in there. And when the humidity level gets too low, it turns that on. And when it gets up to a certain point, you just tell it when to shut off. And it really does work great. They got them for temperature. They got them for humidity. They'll turn on a vent fan, or they will either add humidity or a dehumidifier. Whatever you plug into it. Very inexpensive remote sensing stuff that will allow automation and security. You know, let's face it, if you're, you know, say you're going away for a couple of days, things can dry out pretty quickly. And you need to, you know, if you want an inexpensive, I'm not going to say inexpensive in terms of, you know, there are almost no cost. There's a little bit of a cost to this as you're investing in something much more wholesome, much more substantial. The inexpensive things where you get out of it for 10 or 20 bucks, they're worthwhile things to have. If you're going to plan on growing food even a little bit every year, you know, there are those expenditures. Now, if you're going to go into something else, like I said, the lighting, it goes up in quality, too, as it goes up in price, in terms of how much you can grow with them. The ones that are made for grow tents that the marijuana growers use, you know, they got a tent that's, you know, perfectly encapsulated with vent holes and everything in it. They have a reflective interior. It's not only easy to clean so you can keep the disease out, but it reflects the light back and bathes the entire plant, top and bottom, from all around. Relatively inexpensive for what you can do with it. So know that that stuff's out there. But here's where I screwed up a few times until I realized what was going on. And it just took research. I put a, you know, get things germinated. I got that down. I get most, if not all, of my seed to pop. And I put a light on them. Oh, and they start growing. I'd be out there every day. Oh, look at how big that's getting. Oh, my goodness. And they're getting bigger and bigger. And all of a sudden, they fall over. Just topple right over. You know, and you see them, they crease, they pinch and fall right over. They got long and leggy. I was all excited to see height. And sure enough, they were growing. And it's much like in the real environment. When you go out and look at, different forestry projects and different types of forestry, you'll see areas where they might have done a clear cut, all right? And then everything that grows up at the same time, all of it is stretching and competing for the sun. You know, years, decades down the road, you can be walking through, a red maple forest, and, you know, there's puffs on the top, long, leggy trunks that often break off in a storm. Or when one topples over, it's like a domino and takes a whole bunch of them out because they're very weak. You know, and this, what I realized is what I had to do is when they germinate, once they pop, you know, before that, light really doesn't matter. When a seed is in the ground, it doesn't have light, right? It just needs temperature to be warm and it needs moisture. Well, boy, once it pops, two things are happening. It's putting a taproot down and it's putting up those solar panels. And it will stretch and stretch and stretch to get enough light until it falls over and dies. So you have got to have your light right down. And with those cheapo lights, they don't put out a lot of wattage. You know, you've got to, you're like an inch off from those things. You just don't want it touching the actual plant, but you have got to get it close. If you do that, the tendency of those new plants that just germinated isn't going to be to stretch up for, you know, two reasons. It doesn't have a root system below to keep it from toppling over, and the stock has not got enough lignin and enough structure to it to hold it up. What you want is girth on that stem, all right? And it let those two initial sun leaves come out and give them all the light that they can handle. You'll eventually see a secondary growth starting from the middle there where some of the real leaves are going to start to develop. because those first two that you see typically fall off. Once the plant gets up and there's enough other biomass above ground to act as solar panels, if you will, and begin turning sunlight into energy, you know, then those will fall off. You got to keep that light right down on them, especially if you're getting those cheap little $10 or $15 grow lights. And they are nice. I've got a bunch of them. You can daisy chain them together, and they fit right in a standard flats. You know, you get the one with the dome on it, and you know, don't totally cheap out and think you're going to use cellophane. It's not going to work. Get the flats that has the clear plastic dome on it, and you got a little vent on the top. That vent hole is important because if you're growing inside early in the year in a colder zone, you're going to be faced with, at some point, acclimating those plants outside. So everyone monitors when their, last frost is and tries to plan when they're going to move things outdoors and have contingencies in case you get them outdoors and then a frost comes along. You got to go out and cover that stuff. You can do that. You just got to get something over it. I remember we used to use sometimes the old pots, planter pots, flower pots, upside down over a plant when it was small and a frost was coming. Other times, I remember sitting out there with my grandparents rolling up old newspaper in the shape of a cone. And then you always got that tail. If you roll it up diagonally, it gives you a little tail that you just put a handful of dirt or a rock on or something. But anything to cover the plant so that the frost doesn't settle on it and kill it. And it can overnight wipe out everything out in your garden if you get it out too early. So, you know, acclimating, because you've germinated nice and warm just the way they like it. They popped, and now you're giving them all the light they want. Every day is a sunny day, and every day gives a little bit of a rain shower to keep them moist and happy. Now, in between that, you've simulated almost everything. But one of the things that you can't, and this gets into some of the advanced biology of plants, is when the wind on plants, when they're very young especially, plants are like, if you can picture having a handful of straws, okay, they're all connected tubes, if you will, from the roots right up to through the plant, you know, and as you bend that, this is, sends signals to the plant of how much lignin it needs to, and lignin is basically a very hard carbon-based sheath. Right, trees, for example, an oak tree has more lignin than a maple tree or a pine tree, which has more lignin than a tomato plant. But that is what gives it structure. And also, by having fans, this is another thing that the hemp growers and the marijuana growers, you'll always see that their grow rooms have fans in them, you know, little oscillating fans. So if you germinated a bunch of plants to the point where you can, you know, keep them on your windowsills, and you got to lay them out on a big table somewhere in your workshop or whatever and get to keep the light on them. But also, you know, having a breeze on these things, if you got somehow, some way, once they pop up, and you're able to acclimate them out of the dome, and that's what the vent hole is important for, is that as they do mature, they're putting out some good roots. You can see it through the bottom. There's structure to the stem. It's kind of rigid and firm. And you've got the vent holes all opened up all the way, because you got to go a little at a time, because you can shock them as they go from like a sauna situation to where now they've got, you know, ambient air coming in and the moisture level is going down in the atmosphere. You got to do it a little bit slow, acclimate them out of it. But once that top comes off, you know, they're able to handle, whatever the ambient atmosphere is. And you just got to keep the water and the light to them. But you now have the opportunity, once the dome is off, you know, wherever they are, if you can, you know, if it's warm enough during the day where you can put them on a windowsill where a breeze comes through and you can open the window, great. If not, having a little fan on them does not hurt at all. It helps make it stout, because I'd much rather have a nice thick stock in a stout plant when I put it in the ground outside. And, you know, like with tomatoes, I often will buy a tomato that could be 10 inches tall in the pot. And I will pull off all the branches on the bottom, not just the sun leaves if they haven't already fallen, which they usually have, but even pinching off regular branches, because tomato plants will put out roots along that entire stalk wherever you put soil around it. So I give it a, you know, good head start at a beefy root system. And at first it looks like, oh my God, what have you done? You just got the little top of a tomato plant sticking out. But man, you hit the afterburners when all that stock that you buried turns into root. You've got that much more intake of everything that the plant needs, and it takes off. But it's really important to acclimate them from inside to outside. A breeze actually has it sends plant signals, chemical signals, and physical signals based on, you know, what that plant is doing. Those, like I said, like a handful of straws, is it bends and moves. It's creating both positive pressure and vacuums within that structure. And it's telling the plant, we need to firm up here. This plant's going to get bigger, and our stock has to be stronger. So that's another thing, is that legginess. Don't judge your new germinated plants based on how fast that plant grows up above the surface. It's nice to see that, and it's encouraging. But slow and consistent is good here too. You don't make them stretch for the light. Keep the light as close to them as you possibly can. And then once they're acclimated out and into the ambient environment, just in a flat without a cover, consider putting some a fan on them, because that will make them stout. They'll still grow in height. Don't think you're lacking anything or losing out. But during this phase, you're trying to toughen it up. It's like a baby going from being nursed to starting to go on solid food. Is that once that plant gets going and you get the real leaves out there, now you got to start thinking about the nutrients that it gets in the soil. And again, I say start with a good soil right from beginning to end, you know, as good as you can get it. The least amount of chemical, the better. The caller from Georgia was right. Is you can become accustomed and addicted to anything, right? We see addictive behavior all around us. Plants can be like that too. What you want them to be is resistant to be able to handle tough times. So why watering once they get up and going, it's not a bad idea to let them, and I'm going to be careful how I say this, I don't want people to take it the wrong way. Like I said, letting your plants dry out to the point that the soil is shrinking from around the pot edges is not a good idea. But what is to intermittently let it get on the drier side to shock the roots into saying, oh my God, I've got to go farther for water. Right? I know a lot of people that put in landscaping plants, and they are fanatical about watering. Usually you got one or the other. They either pay no attention to it. I think you put it in the ground, it's just going to do what it does for decades, and you don't have to do anything. Then there's others that are out there every 12 hours watering. And they do it with their grass. They do it with their shrubs. And, you know, the roots never go anywhere. So while your grass later on, as you're out playing, letting the kids running around, and the grass just slides right off the surface because there's no roots. It has not had to stretch for water. Well, you want to promote root growth And it's a delicate dance when you really get into it, because you got to balance the promotion of root growth and the promotion of biomass, because the bigger the plant, the more flower sites there are, right? Common sense. All right. So, you know, there's a delicate dance that goes on there, but that root system is more important than most people will give it credit for, because it is the conduit of everything that you give it: water, nutrients, macronutrients, micronutrients. It's your roots that is going to give that to the pretty part that you see above the ground. So you want good, healthy roots, and you've got to promote that root growth when you can. Early on, you're going to see when your pot starts to fill up, that's wonderful. But when they begin swirling around, you may have to transplant them out. So it's not uncommon for there to be a couple, two or three transplants from the time you start in the flat, little tiny cups, to the point that you've got an individual, maybe a 3 or 4 inch pot for a plant that's going to be put out into the garden. So you've got to, you know, let those roots grow and promote growth, not in a swirl around the bottom either. Pull them out, rough them up a little bit, put them in a bigger pot, let the whole mass of that pot continue to fill up with the new root growth, because it is going to be critical later on down the road. You don't want to, and I've gotten plants like that too that I bought from stores that when I pull it out of the pot, there's really not crap for roots there. Great big huge top, and the stalks even feel fleshy and soft. And it's because they were pampered too much. All right, there is a time where you let up on the water a little bit. You know, when it's good and healthy and the plant is lush and full, let it go. You know, but watch it. Don't get to the point, because you can kill sensitive roots too if you let them totally dry out. But to add a little bit of hydraulic stress like that will cause them to grow in search of water. So you got to let them search for water a little bit too. Let me go over and check the see if there's anything up in the text chat here. Holy crap, everyone's going back and forth here. Yeah, we'll get to, I'm going to scan for questions in the text chat right now. We got a break coming up at the top of the hour. Please do hit the share button. Get the word out. We're going to be talking about some current events and wrapping up our discussion on germination right after this quick break. It's Red Pill Politics, and you listen to Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance. Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these 5 easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your 5 easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our 5 easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Hey, do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the ones in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, or fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you'll see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Check us out at SusannahSecret.com. That's SusannahSecret.com. secret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, secret.com.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.